fantasy freaks and geeks. What's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside by the fantasy hipsters, Matt Franciscovich, Matt Harmon.
Wow. I was first.
Same. You were indeed.
That's fine.
Beard, what's going on?
What up? I'm kind of sad, but also kind of I had fun yesterday, but I was also very sad because, you know, Stephon Diggs and Jordan Howard were on my bench. So,
oh!
You know,
just going to get right in.
I didn't go with my gut, and I got caught up in the narratives of the week, and
indeed,
I got banged in a big spot.
Yeah, you did, man. It was a great slate of games.
All week, man. TNF kicked it off.
It was awesome.
Wire to wire. Like,
amazing.
Surprising performances.
Yeah.
Great games.
Oh, my
thrilling
God.
Finishes. Overtime.
It was awesome.
The tilt was real.
It was amazing. We got the WizKid from Wisconsin. Alex Gailhart, what's cracking?
I think I finally hit season form. You know,
yeah.
You hear players always talk about first couple weeks.
Sure.
They're not quite in season shape yet. But
yesterday
I logged like a 15-hour day.
Yeah.
Because I filled in on the radio for one of the hosts. So I was there at 7, did an hour of that.
Oh!
Came here from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. basically.
Good God.
And then I got like 5 hours of sleep, but I'm ready to rock today. I'm feeling
not
good.
Even phased.
So,
not phased.
No, it's like that's why earlier in the season, like
that's
week one, I had one of those
Dragon.
Days. And I was like, I woke up, I was like that dog in the GIF that pops out of the car. But now I'm feeling good. So I think match, you know, game fitness has come back for me. Which
game fitness.
A welcome thing as we,
nice.
We get approaching the first month of the season here.
Boy, young boy. What's cracking?
Oh man, yeah, it is the season. I feel a little fat, you know, already.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I went to the gym last night after the Sunday night.
We
game.
Get it. You work out,
right?
God,
well, gotta let you know. But anyways, and I'm like, yeah, I'm back in here with all the psychopaths at like 9:30 at night. Like, what is the life situation for all of you people that you're here right now?
Maybe I know they just like working out at night.
It's nice. I mean, it is much less crowded.
Yeah.
But I'm like.
I think that's probably a big part of it.
I feel like it. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why I'm there.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, this is the only time for me to be here. I don't know, like, what your axe murdering schedules is, but, like, that's why you're all here, but this is the only time I can be here.
Wow.
Producer Chris in the building. What's
up? Good morning,
up?
Guys. How you doing?
What's cracking, man?
You know.
Still recovering from football. The Chargers loss?
It was a tough one yesterday.
Oh, my God. So
you can't,
brutal.
You can't turn the ball over against the Chargers, or against the Chiefs, rather, much less three times in the first half. So,
not good. You.
Puts you behind the eight ball a little bit.
Yep.
That was not
a little bit.
That was not good. All right, we got a big time show in front of us here today. We're going to talk about top performers. We'll talk about your biggest disappointments. We will get into Jordan Howard and Stephon Diggs and all those guys that exceeded expectations. We'll talk about some target leaders, give you some waiver wire guys that you should pick up. And you know what? We're adding this to the rundown as well. We're doing EDG on a Monday, baby. We're doing EDG takeaways. Every damn game, we're going to give you takeaways from every single game that happened in the NFL, and we will get to it. Now, normally we start off with news. Normally we start off with your top headlines. But we're in a climate now where you just can't get away from the whole political thing. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we've hit a lot of politics on the Fantasy Podcast because – there's not a lot of room for it. Maybe in DAPs
no one
somewhere,
cares, really.
Right? But off the top of the show, we don't really do it, right? But the bottom line is it's forced in our face because the president made comments and made some very disparaging comments about NFL players. Here we are in the NFL. We're doing an NFL podcast. You kind of have to address that situation that's just lingering everywhere. And we've seen it everywhere from, you know, Rich Eisen doing a great statement, handling it very professionally, and just such a difficult topic to address and to handle because that's really not our wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, and I will say that this weekend, I think, if you're upset right now that we're talking about this, like, too bad. Like, the whole stick to sports thing is obviously – pretty much like put in the grave, and we didn't ask for it to be put in the grave. Like,
sure,
that got put on us. But this weekend was a weekend of football that I think I will remember for probably the rest of my life, or at least as long as I'm watching the game, because it was just one of those instances. And you know, Alex and I talked about this before we were going into a movie on Saturday. But the funny thing about people that are very bothered by the anthem protests, and I'm not, but I understand other people's perspectives of why it does bother them. I think one thing that, like, they're like, you know, it's fine if you want to protest, but, you know, do it some way else where it doesn't offend me. But But that's the point of protest, is to have a, like, for it to be a thing that, that gets you talking. And I think that's what this weekend was all about to me. Is like the whole country is talking about it. Football, like every pregame show is talking about it.
Every pregame show.
And this morning I woke up, I listened to the daily podcast from the New York Times. The NFL story was the top story on the daily for our, you know, quote unquote paper of record in the country.
It's crazy. It was just, I don't know, man. And I get it. A lot of folks don't want to hear about it and don't want, you know, they want their sports to be their reprieve. But it's just, and look, I would like nothing more than to do that.
Yeah.
I would like nothing more than to do that. But, man, it's awfully tough when, you know, the president's forcing the issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of the players addressed it too in their postgame comments.
Yeah, exactly.
And in their pregame comments as well. And I just, my heart goes out to them, man.
I was going
to
say, I liked what Derek Carr said. He said, you know, whether, he was like, we're all a unified team and we wanted to be out there and show everyone that whether we were kneeling or standing, that we're all unified together.
Sure.
And that's like the most important thing to me is like, you know, these guys are like, they're like bands of brothers and they just want to show like whatever side you're on, just they're unified, and that's the whole point. Don't be divisive about it.
Right. And I think the other thing is kind of to piggyback off of your point, Harmon, that it's important when there are these protests talking that even if you disagree with it, the fact that somebody is protesting is because they have something they need to say or they feel that they're being disrespected for.
Right.
And it's important in those instances, even if you disagree with it vehemently, to actually listen to what they're saying, because they wouldn't be doing it without a point. They're not just doing it to grandstand. I mean, the very first person to do this, Colin Kaepernick, drew no attention to himself. You know, he was kneeling off to the side in preseason games, and it was only one astute beat reporter caught it and then saw it on the tape, and then that started this whole national conversation. But to end this point that I want to make, I just want to give a quote. I want to read a quote from the Dalai Lama who said this: "When you talk, you are only repeating what you already know. But if you listen, you may learn something new." So it's fine to have different opinions and to, you know, stand for what you believe in or kneel for what you believe in. But the important thing is when one of your fellow Americans believes that they need to make a statement like this, just listen to what they have to say.
I love that quote.
If you still believe differently afterwards, that's fine. But
I love that quote.
It's important that you need to listen here.
I'll say this as well, and you know, raising a child has really kind of taught me about myself and how people listen, right? So, but I'll say this, man. It's like, look, I get that people get crazy fired up about this situation and about this topic, but can I offer a little bit of advice? And I know this is going to sound, I don't know how you're going to take it, but man, don't get that fired up. Take a breath, think about it, just think about it, and just take a breath and then move on. I would just say don't get that fired up about it, because, I mean, at the end of the day, what the hell are we talking about? It's standing or kneeling for the flag. People have different life experiences. People have different thoughts and beliefs. Just take a breath. Let them believe what they want to believe and move on. It don't impact your life, man. That's just my thing. I don't get why people get so fired up about it. I mean, I guess I do. But that being said, it's like, look, just take a breath.
Well, what you're saying, I mean, people's different life experiences, and this is another thing we're talking about this weekend, is that, you know, and this goes back to a lot of what I did in school and, like, you know, with sociology and all that sort of stuff. Like, people's perception, not reception. I was going to just go,
reception.
Reception.
Always got to squeeze
obvious.
His brand
people's,
in.
People's, like, perception, that influences their reality. Like, reality is totally what you perceive it to be. And other people have different life experiences. And, like, that's what Gelhar is saying, is that this is a time when I think we should all listen to each other. And I think the NFL players did a really good job of showing that this weekend. That, like you were saying, Franchise, it's – We do not all come from the same place. We do not all believe the same things, but there's a common goal for all of those people. And I hope that, like, as a country and as a, you know, a society of human beings, we can also get to that point.
All right. So there you go. Great conversation off the top. And again, I appreciate everybody kind of bearing with us on that one. And I know it's not necessarily our wheelhouse, but, you know, man, it's the elephant in the room. So there you go. All right. Let's talk our top headlines and talk football.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
Man, I'm legit bummed out about this first story, man. Darren Sproles reportedly tore his ACL and broke his arm on the same play Sunday. That came in Philadelphia's dramatic win over the New York Giants. It's likely the end of the road for the great 34-year-old running back. But, man, that just bums me out. He has been a great player in this league for so very long, very effective, and just has a great magnetic personality as well. Everyone who's ever played with Darren Sproles has nothing but great things to say about Darren Sproles. Just ask Drew Brees.
He's had a sneaky, incredible career.
He has.
Unreal.
He's been really, really good.
He's one of those players that every year in the draft, some player gets compared to him.
Oh, yeah.
And they're never actually Darren
Sproles. Yeah.
Tariq Cohen might be the guy that like actually breaks that mold, but there's that happens every year in the draft.
Yeah, man, it's been cool. And I remember seeing Darren Sproles all the way back at K-State just doing the whole, you know, Roadrunner thing with the legs churning and everything. He's just a fun player to watch.
Dude, I've always loved watching Darren Sproles. I think I actually said yesterday before he got injured, I'm like, man, this guy's a marvel. He's like 34 years old.
It's crazy.
Like 5'9" out there, you know, ripping through people. And
yeah.
It's sad to see potentially his career end this way.
All right, let's talk about from a fantasy perspective, though. Wendell Smallwood played 43 of the 76 offensive snaps for Philadelphia. Corey Clement, though, got in early as well and also had a nice TD run. What do we make of the injury news, and what do we make of the Philadelphia backfield? It should also be noted that the reports of LeGarrette Blount's demise greatly exaggerated, apparently. He got in there and got a touchdown as well.
My sister was hitting me up right before the game, like, hey, I got offered a trade, Stephon Diggs and somebody else for Gronk and LeGarrette Blount. And my response was just, well, Blount is worthless, so. And then, like, 30 minutes later, she's like, hey, Blount just scored a touchdown. Do you even know what you're talking about? I was like, he had no carries last week. No carries.
None. None. But
well, for 67 in this one.
If we learned anything from week three, is that we learn nothing from week two.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what we learned in week three.
Agree.
I think Smallwood's the back to pick up, but you're right. Like, in a lot of these instances, we're doing our best to draw conclusions, but a lot of these teams are still searching for identities and starting to find them. And the Eagles, we're getting to run the ball a little better with Blount and Smallwood, so this could be a turn. I mean, it's going to be a committee, but Smallwood is certainly worth an ad, and Clement's just a name to circle on the deep waiver wire radar there.
I liked his TD run, though. I thought he looked good there, coming off tackle there. But, yeah, I saw this comment being made a lot, too, is that the preseason is now officially over. You know, for a lot of these guys, they didn't really get a lot of snaps, you know what I mean? So now that they've gotten the snaps and gotten the run, they look a hell of a lot better here in week three than they did in week one and two. All right, let's talk about Oakland. Oakland was just shut down Sunday night. In a week where a lot of crazy stuff happened, this is up there in terms of just totally unexpected.
Wild.
Oakland getting completely shut down. Cooper and Crabtree combined for 2 catches and 13 yards. Combined.
Yeah.
It's insane.
But Cooper was on the injury report with a knee coming in. I think Crabtree left the game with a chest injury.
He did, but that was until late, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they were getting absolutely just manhandled by the secondary in Washington there. It led to this, I mean, just epic Josh Norman rant, who said, quote, "Whatever you do, do not run your mouth if you're a wide receiver and expect to show up Sundays. Because I'm telling you, we are here and we are waiting. Whatever that young cat said, Coop, go and take it back. Crabtree, I've got nothing to say to you. Yes, I may be cover two, but I'm cover one, too. I'm going to cover one. I'm going to cover two, cover three, cover four, cover all of them."
Wow.
I love it.
Burn.
There's not much better than Josh Norman when he's on his high horse.
Oh, yeah. My God. He's the best. When he's after a win, he is the absolute best. I love Josh Norman. All right. What the hell, though, happened to Oakland, man?
I think they kind of made this point on the ATN podcast last night as well, but this was a signal that this Oakland offense is going to sink or swim with Derek Carr. And he struggled out of the gate. He threw 2 ghastly interceptions.
Horrible.
And then his protection surprisingly failed. He'd had good protection all season. But you had wrote about that, Harmon, right, with the Washington pass rush being a little underrated.
I did, yeah. In the Next Gen Stats column on Thursday, I talked about, that Oakland had the pretty much, you know, top-of-the-line pass protection coming into this game. I mean, they allowed a pressure rate of literally 0 up against the Jets in week 2, 8.5 for the first 2 weeks. That jumped up to 18.2 pressure rate allowed against Washington, who does have a really underrated front 7. When they can get cooking, they can pressure the quarterback. Coming into that game, they were top 5 in pressure rate.
All right, so I guess, is it just a blip on the radar for Oakland? I mean, we still believe in the offense, right? It's not like this is a sign of things to come or anything.
No, they have too many talented pieces. They'll get right.
Okay, what about on Washington's side? Do we actually believe them defensively? I mean, this is the game plan that a lot of football teams would like to employ. Great defense, ball control offense, and effective passing game as well. I mean, Kirk Cousins was absolutely cooking.
He was slinging it from
outset.
Like I was afraid because I waited a little while. I was like, I don't want to tweet this because I'm going to jinx him. But after like 8 or 9 great throws, I was like, dude's dealing. Yeah. And then Marcus is like, you know, he's going to throw a pick now. But he didn't. He played really well. And I mean, he's got new number one wide receiver Chris Thompson out there racking up 150 yards.
That was nuts.
OW on the depth chart.
They got Chris Thompson and Vernon Davis out there.
In the rebirth of Josh Doctson.
And Josh, Josh Doctson, mossing fools.
Yeah.
I mean, he lost Emerson.
One catch of the day. Yeah. But it was awesome.
It was awesome.
And we've been waiting like 2 years for it. So
I think what this means, though, is it's a little worrisome for Jameson Crowder and Terrell Pryor. They're out there a lot, but their target totals are way too inconsistent.
Yep.
So I think you're going to – this team – and they made the point, Bill Callahan is there in the offense now, in the offensive staffing, and he always brings – a good running game, which would explain why this unit has been getting going. Rob Kelly was cooking a little bit. Mac Brown was going. Chris Thompson's going.
So the only person who wasn't going, Samaje Perine.
Sorry, James.
Yeah.
I was going to try and leave it out.
Pour one out for Samaje.
But I think this is a good sign for Kirk Cousins. Evan Silva had a great tweet about how he's historically started really slow in each of the two games, averages like 15 points a game, and then week three, it's like 24 and up.
He's off and running.
So I think it's a good sign for him, but the pass catchers are going to be really hard.
Let me just apologize to the podcast listeners and to the Facebook Live listeners right now and the watchers. R.I.P. Samaje Perine. I don't know.
James, it happens to the best
of
us.
No, here's the thing. I don't understand it. He was running very hesitantly and running as if he was – the only thing he was concerned about was protecting the ball.
Well,
because – he did not protect the ball.
That's what happens when your coaching staff says things like, we don't forget fumbles.
Yeah,
I do think – I mean, I think Jay Gruden's a pretty good coach, and I think a lot of other good coaches have done this too, but – it is. Psychologically, just think about it. If you're like, I can't do this one thing, I can't do this one thing, I can't do this one thing. Oh, I did that one thing. Like, I'm going to ruin it. You know, it makes you unable to do the other parts of your job that you got to do to be successful. It's why it drives me nuts when coaches are so anal about the fumble thing.
I don't know. Anyway, so P. Ryan's obviously out of the mix, and I guess he hurt his hand and left that game as well on that fumble. But if Kelly continues to miss more time, and again, the initial fear was that he fractured a rib. They said it was a bruised rib. But regardless, he was inactive for Sunday night. If he's not available, P. Ryan obviously looks like he's out of the mix now. Is it Mac Brown? Or is it just more Chris Thompson, who, again, 38 rushing yards, but good God almighty, 150 yards receiving and a touchdown as well?
I think it's more Chris Thompson. He had more touches in this game than he had in week 1 and 2 combined. Mm. And it's not going to be a case where he's going to come in and get 25 touches a week, but they might turn him from a 6-touch-a-week guy into a 10-to-15-touch-a-week guy. And then if that's the case, you want him, his big playability, his pass-catching volume, as opposed to the guy that's going to get 12 carries on the ground.
Jay Gruden did say 2 weeks ago, we don't want to give Chris Thompson too much work because he's a smaller back and we need him out there, but I don't understand. I don't see how they can keep him off the field.
Dude has been their offense for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
100%.
They got to get him in there.
Let's talk about Jordan Howard. It's the return of JoHo, baby.
I'm going to leave for this segment.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
This is versus Pittsburgh, who, again, has a pretty good defense. 23 carries, 138 yards on the ground. He also got 5 receptions on 5 targets.
Led the team.
26 yards there and 2 touchdowns.
It was a great game.
Let's start with Franchise. Franchise, what do we make of the performance there?
Really?
He says he's going to run it.
Look, it's against your team. You watched every snap of that game.
I benched Jordan Howard in my most important league of record.
Yeah.
Because coming into this game, everything was negative about him. He left last week with his arm in a sling.
Yeah.
Sunday morning it comes out. I think it was Schefter said, Jordan Howard is playing through a sprained AC joint.
Yep.
Everything in my head is like, I can't start this guy against the Steelers. Yeah.
You take one big hit, you're out.
Yeah, exactly. And we saw him taking hits the whole time. And
it's his running style.
He was slow to get up. There was one time he was like squirming on the ground, holding his arm. And then he got the ball again. Every time he touched the ball, it was like he ripped off a 10-15-yard run.
Total bad.
And
seriously.
His second touchdown was a bit of a fluke because the long run by Tariq Cohen in overtime was called back. They said he stepped out of bounds, and then Howard got it at the end to win the game in overtime. But our next-gen stats pointed to the return of guard Kyle Long in the Bears' offensive line.
It's a big boost.
How that affected the holes that Howard had to run to. He had 2.4 average yards gained before a defender closed in. This is a next-gen stats metric. Compared to negative 0.38, negative 1.57 in week one and
good
two.
God.
So he was getting through the holes past the line before defenders were close to him, and I think Kyle Long had a big part to do with that.
Yep.
And, yeah, Tariq Cohen got work too was great in PPR leagues.
Sure did.
And
over 100 total yards.
And I think we saw a scenario where, like we said, Howard and Cohen in these game scripts where the Bears keep the game close or are winning can coexist
John Fox fantasy.
Harmon knows this offense all too well.
This is the John Fox fever dream like I've never seen before. and look, I mean, I was on this podcast saying last week, like, if you drafted Jordan Howard, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm screwed because I was very wrong on that thing to say. But, you know, look, the Bears are kind of like a sneaky okay team. I don't think they'll be one of, like, the league's embarrassment. I mean, they don't have anything close to, like, an acceptable passing game.
Yeah. Right.
But their defense is pretty good. I mean, they kept it tight with the Falcons.
Especially at home.
They're
very good at home.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good unit. I mean, Fangio and Fox are good coaches, and
they've definitely coached up the defense.
Yes, and they have two dynamic running backs. And it's funny, like, Tariq Cohen's, like, this hot new thing, and I think we're, like, pretty quick to be like, oh, Jordan Howard. But it's like, he's a second year back too. I mean, these are two like young foundation points of their offense on rookie contracts, and I mean it's exciting for that perspective at least.
Adam Rank and I had made this point and don't skewer me, all right, Twitter, but this combination of Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen reminds me, I'm not saying it's a perfect match, but it reminds me of the Lendale White Chris Johnson duo that we saw back in the day in Tennessee. It's just, we had that big bruising back, and then we've got this game changer as well that doesn't profile as an every down guy, but man, this guy can make some electric plays. Now, it just reminds me of that. And actually, I think Adam Rank had pointed out there was, I think the running backs coach there in Chicago was in Tennessee as well.
Well,
during that time.
Yeah, I think Loggins, the offensive coordinator, is at least.
Oh, that's who it was. It was Loggins, yeah.
Well, two things on that. One, shout out to Adam Rank for being like the one among, I think, everybody on the NFL fantasy team that said, don't bury Jordan Howard. He was
true.
Obviously correct in that assessment. But also, like, what is Jordan Howard's, like, tequila intake? Because wasn't Lendale White, like, a big
That's
tequila intake?
No, that was his downfall. It was Lendale White's downfall.
So we need to at least get some numbers on that to look
at. Okay, good.
He better be intaking nano bubbles to heal up that shoulder.
True.
Because he's on a short week now going into Lambeau.
Oh, that's good.
Thursday night.
All right, so what do you do with him on Thursday? Do you play him?
I'm going to probably
you gotta roll
play
him. You got to roll him out.
Play him and hate yourself.
I'm going to hate myself. I'm going to tilt on Thursday like I do every week.
when he gets the 5-carry, 25-yard game, he's just out.
It's tough.
Big difference is going to be if Mike Daniels plays in that Packers front seven.
Okay.
They're already thin on the defensive line, and Joe Mixon was just carving them up. And as the game wore on, that Packers game, the Bengals' offensive line was just pushing the Packers' defensive line, like, yards down the field.
They don't have a great offensive line either, the Bengals.
No, they lost a lot of guys. But, I mean, it was the case where it was just a battle of attrition. Like, that was a weakness coming into the Packers this season was their depth on the defensive line.
Right.
And they were without two of their top starters in Nick Perry and Mike Daniels. So they were just getting blown off the ball in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
All right, per Ian Rappaport, quote, Kelvin Benjamin knee did not suffer a major injury based on early indications. One source said, quote, he's fine. Which
everyone's fine after they get injured.
Sam might
Bradford
might play
fine.
In 1 week, might play in 6 weeks.
Yeah,
he's fine.
Either way,
fine.
He's fine.
He's fine. But if anyone saw the injury to Kelvin Benjamin, he actually really got lucky avoiding a very serious injury. He got rolled up on from behind, and his foot at the very last second did get free. So, but if it didn't, man, that thing would have turned real nasty. As it was, he grabbed his knee and grabbed his thigh and hamstring area immediately following the injury. He left in the first quarter, I believe it was, did not return. But this is good news. This is good news that it's not, you know, a very serious tear of any, you know, ligament or muscle. So that's really, really good. Now, how much time will he miss? We're not sure. And when we get more information, we will talk about that. Doug Baldwin, he also left the game later in that Tennessee matchup. Man, that was a hard-hitting affair,
yeah.
Seattle and Tennessee. But Doug Baldwin suffered a groin injury. That also not believed to be or believed to not be serious, whatever that means. How much time will he miss? Maybe he misses none. I don't know.
Good to see him ball out finally, too.
Yes.
15 targets.
He'd been getting decent volume and putting up, like, okay stat lines, like, yeah, for PPR, but, like, this was the kind of game where you were waiting for with Baldwin. It was great to see him do it on the road, too, where the Seahawks' offense on grass as well, as people have pointed out, typically isn't as great.
All right, let's talk about your top performers. Speaking of Doug Baldwin having a great Sunday, we'll start with quarterback. We'll do quarterback and then wide receiver, and then I'll throw it to you guys.
Sure.
To talk about some of these tandems here. So Tom Brady, 378 through the air, 5 touchdowns. He was your quarterback 1. Your quarterback 2, Russell Wilson, 373 and 4 touchdowns. Case Keenum, ladies and gentlemen, your quarterback 3, 369 yards through
nice,
the air,
nice,
3 touchdowns. Your quarterback 4, Jacoby Brissett, 259 yards passing, a touchdown pass, but he threw in 2 rushing touchdowns as well. Amazing. Let's talk about wide receivers, and again, I'll throw it out to you guys. But Stephon Diggs, again, following a horrific Week 2 performance, comes through in Week 3, 11 targets, 8 receptions, 173 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns. Brandon Cooks, he had a Brandon Cooks game, 5 receptions, 131 yards, and 2 touchdowns, including a 2-point conversion. I love when those random 2-point conversions happen. Sammy Watkins on Thursday, 6 receptions, 106 and 2 touchdowns. T.Y. Hilton, 9 targets, 7 receptions, 153 yards, most of it in the first half. He had a touchdown as well. So, of course, the big storyline is Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs. What do we do there? Do we believe in the whole Diggs resurgence with Case Keenum?
So we were talking about this, I think, before we started recording, but this is the reason why I've never been able to let Case Keenum go. It's because, you know, I always reference that 2013 game against the Colts where he fed Andre Johnson 3 touchdowns and just was – he looked like the next coming of Tony Romo or something, essentially. And then also there was a game last year that I think people forget about that I forgot about until thinking about it this morning, where, against the Lions, where he dropped 3 touchdowns, completed 84% of his passes. Like, every 20 games, Case Keenum is going to give you one of these. I will say, looking at, like, the next-gen stats pressure graphic, like, when he's able to sit back in the pocket like he was against the Bucs and not have a lot of pressure – he can make throws, and this, again, like, harkened back to that 2013 run when, you know, against the Colts in that game, he was just able to sit back, pick apart the teams, and then I remember, like, 2 weeks later, he played the Ravens in Baltimore, who just, you know, obliterated him with pressure. So Keenum has some
I mean, this was against a Tampa Bay defense that was pretty good, though.
Yeah.
They were banged up.
They did start losing players, but, I mean, even just right from the jump.
Exactly.
He looked great. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, eventually he started cooking when guys went down. I mean, even right from the jump, like I said. I don't know. The funny thing is, like, I mean, I played Stephon Diggs yesterday. I didn't bench him anywhere. But
cool.
Like, yeah, but here's the thing. Like, there's
good
no
for you.
But there's no reason to, like, pat me on the back here, because I did the same thing in Week 2, and that was the wrong decision. And that's the thing why I don't try to live by mottos of, like, you always start your studs, or, you know, you don't do that. Because in Week 2, like, that was – not the correct thing to do for Stephon Diggs, for Odell Beckham, for T.Y. Hilton. Now this week, it was the correct thing to do. So
I was thinking about that last night, too. I figured the start your studs knots were going to be coming out in force, like, this is why you always play them. I'm going to be like, no, Cole,
but that was
calm down.
I don't know what the correct – there's just no hard and fast rules to these things. Sometimes it goes your way. Sometimes it doesn't.
Because fantasy is stupid.
It is.
But I will say, I mean,
I hate my life.
For Diggs and
– and I hate my life.
Well,
for Diggs, and, you know, I mean, the guy's unfrickin' believable.
Dude, he's so good.
Like, he's made a bunch of tight window catches. He's done everything.
And he's done everything.
And Thielen's right there, too. I mean, I said this after Week 1. I tweeted this out, and people were, of course, like, too early, blah, blah, blah. But they're one of the best. They're up
duos,
there,
top five
easily. And by the end of the year, I think he could easily be the best 1-2 duo in the league.
Before we jump on from the section, I just wanted to transition to Wilson so we don't stay on that one team for too long. But, sure. Wilson, his throwing motion stuff looked really off the first couple weeks. I mean, he was behind that offensive line, but he was missing throws. It was loopy. Like, I even saw some people doing comparisons to the Bortles, like, huge wind-up where it's
that's not anything you want.
No. But in this game, he started off really rough. There were, like, no points, but I need to go back and watch it more closely. But what I saw in the second half was more of that, and I don't know if it was just superhuman Russell Wilson getting activated as he has frequently done throughout the years, or they made a halftime adjustment or something, but his throw was a lot tighter, his passes were a lot crisper, and he was just making the type of throws up the seam into Doug Baldwin around the area that you're like, that's the Russell Wilson I know. So I think he might be coming back now.
I guess I would have concerns there because, again, as you mentioned, in the first half, it was atrocious. And then it's when Tennessee built up a nice big lead. I think they let their foot off the gas pedal a little bit. And then that's when Russell Wilson and the Seahawks offense kind of took advantage. So I don't know, man. I'm a little bit torn on Russell Wilson. Obviously, you look at the stat line, you say, oh, he had a great game. But at the end of the day, it's because a lot of it was because they were down.
They dug themselves into it.
The throws that I saw were more typical Russell Wilson.
Yes.
It wasn't like, oh, Doug Baldwin's covered because they're playing three deep safeties and don't want to give up a touchdown. They were tight window throws. There were guys that were contested, and he was making crisp passes with the zip on them, not overthrowing receivers and stuff.
All right, Jacoby Brissett and T.Y. Hilton, that's another combination that a lot of folks were worried about in terms of T.Y.'s production. Yeah. And he came through in a big-time way, 7 receptions, 153 yards, and a touchdown. What do you make of the performance there in Indianapolis?
I think the Browns make everyone look good. That's what I think.
I don't know. They've had a sneaky good defense, though. I mean, I guess I'm overstating the facts here. They're not the worst in the league, is what I'm
saying. I don't think anyone expected two rushing touchdowns for Brissett. Plus, you know, that boosts his day immensely.
But we had talked about this in the podcast previously. Does having a guy like Brissett who can move and be mobile add a little bit of juice to this offense? I was more excited about it.
For sure. Over a guy like Scott Tolzien, definitely.
Exactly.
I mean, Andrew Luck has legs, too. And also Frank Gore had 25 carries, but he only had like 57 rushing yards in this game. He did get into the end zone.
Yeah.
I'm not going out to like trade for Frank Gore right now.
Right.
But, you know,
when
Brissett, he's probably going to be in my sell high column. When Brissett vultures two rushing touchdowns, but it was nice to see him connecting with, T.Y. Hilton.
It was.
Also for the record, well, this was a good sign and it was great to see Brissett, playing well with more practice time with the team.
Yeah.
They go on the road to Seattle in week 4.
Uh-oh.
Well, I mean, talk about for a soft landing spot for Seattle, too.
Right?
That we were just talking about. Like, they should, if they're really back after a good second half, they should smash in that game.
Also, Chris Carson.
Touchdown. There you go. Todd Gurley, 28 carries, 113 yards, 5 receptions, 36. I think the 5 receptions, that's a very good sign for Todd Gurley. He had 3 total touchdowns on Thursday. He was an absolute beast. Jordan Howard, as we talked about, 138 on the ground, 26 through the air, 2 touchdowns.
moving right along.
Kareem Hunt.
Oh, buddy.
Worst pick in the draft.
The biggest stretch in the draft.
Yep.
Oh, man, 172 on the ground and a touchdown.
That guy's special.
69-yard touchdown
run.
He's been slowing down ever since his
week only one. Three-game sample size.
Gradual decline.
Gradually declining.
He has not hit 40 points yet again. I think it might be time to cut him.
Look, the biggest thing that popped up here from our next-gen stats is that he was running mostly to the right side behind Mitchell Schwartz, and he was before his 69-yard touchdown run in the fourth quarter. He was averaging 8.13 yards per carry when running behind Schwartz. So,
whoa, nice. What?
Schwartz was just dominating.
Oh, that's great!
On
He's
the
a smart guy.
Line.
He follows me on Twitter. So,
there you go.
So,
one good life decision.
You know, it's interesting too because Kareem Hunt. I think he had put up an okay day. You know, he had to put up an okay day. It wasn't anything to write home about, but it was good, solid running back performance.
Yeah.
And then he just, out of nowhere, they're trying to drain clock.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, he just breaks one off
for
a 69-yard run to the house.
Yeah, he's good.
And we saw a little bit of that last week, too, where he really had nothing going on in the first half. But as we've seen with a lot of workhorse backs, when they get going, when they get the sweat going, when the offensive line gets into a little bit of a rhythm, all of a sudden, they start finding holes that weren't there in the first half. And that's, I don't know, Kareem Hunt to me and Dalvin Cook are great reasons why we have said this many times. Stick with one guy, man.
Yeah.
Stick with one guy. I don't know.
I also think, real quick on Dalvin Cook, I got a lot of questions about him. With Keenum being in this weekend and then playing the tough Bucs defense, people were like, you can't start him. And I was like, well, no, like, he's at worst a low-end flex because he's going to get volume. Like, the week before he had his 70, 80 total yards or whatever and had that touchdown called back, I'm like, that's a reasonable expectation again. But you know that he's so talented, he's got the home run ability, there's lots of upside with it. Yeah. So, and it's also, these are the running backs, I know we discussed this, and the C.J. Anderson call on me came back to bite me in the ass in a big way this weekend with him tying Jamaal Charles for touches. But I just I would refuse to sell high on these workhorse running backs.
No way.
I got you.
No way.
Like, guys like Todd Gurley, like, everybody immediately after Thursday Night Football were like, should I sell him? Should I sell him? Should I sell him?
He does have a tough schedule.
He does.
But I mean, what are you going to get
back? He's going to get the volume.
Yeah, that is the question.
It's like, what are you getting back?
Well, this is why trade questions are probably the most infuriating to, like, answer on Twitter, because it's like, well, there's about 345 possible scenarios for us to talk about here. And I probably don't care about 330 of them.
I don't
so,
even
like, what are we
it.
Doing? You know, like, yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. If you can get something nice, sure, but there's not a lot of these guys out there.
There's not a lot of these guys
that are getting 20-plus touches on
the guys
pretty
getting,
good teams.
That are getting scoring opportunity touches, which Gurley has received all of them. And, like, Ty Montgomery, I know we all love him in this room. He hasn't been actually spectacular from efficiency, but guess what? Dude's getting the rock by the goal line.
Oh, yeah.
And he's played more snaps than any other running back.
By far. I mean, he played 93% of the snaps in week three. Jamaal Williams played 5 snaps total. So, yeah, he's getting that volume, man. We talk about Dalvin Cook, 27 carries, 97 yards, and a touchdown. He also had 5 receptions for 72. He has been special through the air. He has been absolutely spectacular through the air. Even when the offensive line is not giving him running room, catching the ball out of the he just looks like an absolute natural catching that football, and that is where he is making his hay right now. All right. Mercedes Lewis at the tight end position.
Can we just fast forward past tight ends? Like, what the hell?
It's like Gronk and a bunch of jabrons.
Unbelievable, man. It's just crazy. Mercedes Lewis, 4 receptions, 3 of them for touchdowns. This is interesting, man. Mercedes Lewis had 3 touchdowns in his previous 3 years combined.
Yep.
Wow. By the way, he came out of school at the exact same time as Maurice Jones-Drew. This guy is ancient, but he's still out there doing things. It's crazy. I asked Mojo in the locker room, hey, man, what's this guy's deal? And he said, all Mercedes does is work out and eat right. That's all he does in the offseason.
Apparently
it
pays off. Yeah, he's still cutting an NFL paycheck.
It's crazy, man. Rob Gronkowski, 10 targets, 8 receptions, 89 yards, and a touchdown. Good game for him. Ryan Griffin, here's the thing. If you wanted to be in the top 10 fantasy tight ends, it was a binary code, right? Did you score a touchdown? Yes, no. Yes, you're in the top 10. No, you're not in the top 10.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all it is. That's what you're banking on.
Literally.
That's the truth.
Yeah, that's the tight end game.
But how about this? Ryan Griffin, Luke Wilson, Lance Kendricks, Jonnu Smith, Adam Shaheen, Garrett Celek all scored touchdowns. Between those 7 guys, including Mercedes Lewis, all of them combined – have less than 1% ownership.
Yeah.
In fantasy.
Lance Kendricks.
Yep.
Lance Kendricks.
He caught a touchdown on a play fake, and then he had a big catch and run on kind of like a busted play. But, like, that's why, like, if you're frustrated with the tight end position, stream it week to week.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it. You write a column. I try to cover it a little bit in matchups as well. But, like, either a team that has bad coverage linebackers and safeties, like the Giants are a good one to stream against. The Lions have had issues with it. Just pick up one of those guys and hope they get in the end zone. Like, that's what Benjamin Watson did for everybody that played him this week.
Yeah,
he was – did he got
yeah, he
just
got
pushed
touchdown.
Outside. He was finished as the tight end 14 right now heading into Monday Night Football.
Garbage time touchdown.
But he was
so frustrating.
3 points out of being the tight end 7. So,
so stupid. Let's talk about biggest disappointments here in week 3. We'll go through it quick. But Cam Newton, 167 pass yards, 3 interceptions. He did save his day somewhat with a rushing touchdown and 16 yards on the ground as well. Joe Flacco put in a negative performance, man.
Nope.
That was offensive.
What? 20? This is true. This is a true stat. 28 passing yards. 28 passing yards.
No.
Total.
That's unreal.
2 interceptions.
This was kind of predictable. Not that he'd have 28 yards, but that he would struggle. I mean, not only did they have to travel, but like, Joe Flacco hadn't really done much at all in the passing game.
28 passing yards? What? That's craziness. Phillip Rivers also a big-time disappointment, 237 yards passing and 3 picks.
Yeah, he was one of my guys this week.
Not great, Bob.
Flopped on that one.
Alex Gilhart, talk to me about Cam Newton.
I think we got to panic a little bit. You got to search for another answer at quarterback. He's clearly not right. His shoulder, I was saying this on the couch yesterday, it looks like it is clear to me that it's still a shoulder issue because the way he's missing throws, like Cam's had bouts of, you know, erratic passes throughout his career, but he's missing a lot where they're either way short or way over. And it's like, it seems like the kind of thing where he doesn't, his motion isn't right. And he's either thinking it's normal and it's way short, or he's overcompensating and chucking it a mile over the player's head. And
I don't think he just doesn't have confidence in the shoulder yet.
Yeah, no, that's it. And this offense just isn't right. And
talk
like,
about
you
preseason.
Can't trust it.
I mean, he threw two passes in the preseason and hardly threw all that much in training camp.
And he didn't throw deep.
No. And not to mention, like you said, this offense is broken. Greg Olsen out for an extended stretch. Kelvin Benjamin probably now out for an extended stretch. Ryan Khalil is he's one of the biggest X factors on the offensive line. He's missed the last two games. That's why they can't really power run with Stewart or McCaffrey. So
Khalil's a good player, man.
Yeah.
Very good.
And their tackles aren't good. Like his brother, Matt Khalil, not good at left tackle. But they've got a great interior offensive line, but when Khalil's out there, it's just a mess. So yeah, this offense is in trouble.
Do you drop Cam Newton or do you just put him to the bench?
Yeah, he's a streamer.
Just drop him.
This was his get right game against the bad Saints defense, and he didn't get right.
Saints defense missing key players in the secondary.
It's true.
Excellent rookie corner Marshawn Lattimore, and one of their safeties I think was out too. So yeah, drop him. Like I'd drop him, pick up Jared Goff.
Yeah, who cares?
Whoa.
Yeah, that's the way the quarterback position is. Who cares? Yeah. Like, don't get attached to these guys.
Yeah.
No, I'm also saying like and pick up Goff because he's got a good matchup this week. Where did he go? He's playing the Cowboys. He's got 10 days to prepare for the Cowboys with that offense that's cooking right now.
All right, at the running back position, your biggest disappointment is Jay Ajayi versus the Jets.
Oh, my God.
Jay Ajayi versus the Jets.
Dang it.
11 carries, 16 yards.
Wasn't he in, like, every one of our perfect lineup picks?
Yes.
Yep.
He was my RB1 for the week in the rankings.
What the hell happened there? Ty Montgomery, 50 total yards. In a relatively good spot there. Shady versus Denver. You kind of felt like this might have been coming, but 14 carries on 21 yards is obviously not great. He's, by the way, he's averaging 2.9 yards per carry on the season. 2.9 yards per carry on the season.
Last two games have been against phenomenal front sevens, though, in Carolina and Denver.
The reason I bring it up, though, is because it's a one-dimensional. I mean, we talk about Chicago being one-dimensional. I mean, this is one-dimensional.
Don't you dare slander Tyrod.
I don't even think it's so much a Tyrod thing.
It's not a Tyrod thing. He's
kidding.
Got no receivers.
I'm just kidding.
Andre Holmes is one of his top guys. Like they don't have weapons on the outside.
Yeah, like Zay Jones is not ready to be a number one receiver. I mean,
Jordan Matthews.
I don't even think he was that kind of prospect yet. Jordan Matthews is still new there. And these guys also don't really fit with what Tyrod does as a quarterback. Either.
They don't have an explosive backfield player like Tariq Cohen in Chicago.
It's a mess.
It's very one note. I mean, it's super monotone offense. It's Shady McCoy, and that is it. But I tell you what, man, I've got big concerns with Shady, especially holding up, knowing what we know about the number of carries and workload that he's gotten. And man, these last few games, he has just gotten beaten up, man. These are tough carries he's putting in. So, but Shady did have 69 total yards on the game. So
nice. I will really, really quickly say about Ty Montgomery. He could be a good buy-low candidate, too, because the Packers' offensive line has just been ravaged with injuries in these last couple games and have been playing some good athletic defensive fronts. You know, the Bengals have Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, and they drafted two rookies there. So he's getting a lot of plays where he's getting crushed behind the line of scrimmage. But
and he's seeing tons of volume.
Once Bulaga and Bakhtiari come back, and Lane Taylor, one of their starting guards, got injured this last week, if they can get that offensive line healthy,
watch out.
Ty Montgomery could start being a lot more effective with his touches.
To your point, too, the Packers, too, as we've seen the last couple of years, it takes them a few games to start gelling offensively, as we've seen the last
it's
couple
the
of years.
The most frustrating thing as a fan to watch that offense with so much talent just, like, lack an identity for the first month of the season. I'm like, why do I do this every year?
And then just catch fire
it's
in the
just,
last
just Groundhog Day. Yeah. I wake up and, like, all right, it's September. Can't wait to watch them put up 17 points.
That's great. All right, Shady. Oh, we talked about Shady. I'm sorry. C.J. Anderson, 43 total yards. All right. At the wide receiver position, Mike Evans, 12 targets, 7 receptions, just 67 yards. It should be noted that he was taking on Xavier Rhodes in the Minnesota defense, so no long-term concern there.
Knocking over coolers on the sideline and stuff.
Oh, he was so frustrated, man.
Angry Mike.
Oh, my God, he was so angry. Alshon Jeffrey, 8 targets, 4 receptions, 56 yards. This after a Week 2 performance where he put up 93 and a touchdown against Marcus Peters. This was a bit of a disappointment there. But, again, against Janoris Jenkins was in that game, wasn't
he? Yes.
Not?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. So there you go. Martavis Bryant, 8 targets, 2 receptions, and 30 yards. He is averaging 45 yards per game through 3 games. I will ask you this, panic meter here on Martavis Bryant. 8 targets, 2 receptions, that's not good.
Yeah, the first play of the game for the Steelers, Big Ben just unloaded a deep ball, and Martavis was wide open down the middle, and it was like, I think he might have got his hands on it, but it was just out of his reach. Like, maybe 1 or 2 more games, and they would have been on the same page with that,
okay,
with the timing and stuff. Right. I'm not freaking out, but I think he's going to be volatile week to week.
He does get a lot of those lower percentage throws, though, and now he's kind of like Martavis Ginn, basically. Like, you need him to hit on a big play.
Yes, I love it. At the tight end position, let's talk about disappointments, of which there were many. Travis Kelce, 1 reception, 1 yard.
Oh, my God.
What?
One target.
1.
What's happening there? That makes no sense. Martellus Bennett, 3 receptions, 12 yards. Again,
what's your panic meter on Martellus Bennett is the new star fantasy tight end?
Done. RIP Martellus, RIP P. Ryan.
Told you.
I apologize. 3 receptions, 12 yards for Martellus. He just, it looks like it's in his head.
I think it is. He could get right later in the season, but he has a lot of weird drops and stuff.
Weird drops.
This is not the Martellus Bennett I'm used to.
Exactly. Very uncharacteristic drops, man. I don't know. He just doesn't seem right mentally, man. I don't know what the hell's going on there. Hunter Henry, they've played 3 games. LA has. They've played 3 games. Hunter Henry has seen 0 targets in 2 of those 3 games.
Every other game, start him. That's a trend.
That's a nightmare right now. I don't think, like, I think it's okay to drop him and just try and
zero targets.
Stream, like,
he's a streamer.
He's a streamer now.
He's a streamer.
0 targets.
Twice for a player of his talent.
No Eric Berry.
That's amazing.
0 targets.
But here's the thing. I was thinking about this last night when I was writing the targets and touches, and not the same degree, but Tyrell Williams has kind of been the same way. Like 7 targets, 5 targets, 7 targets. He's done nothing with them. Mm-hmm. The problem is this Chargers pass catching group and overall offense is crowded, and we knew that coming into the season. But I think what we might have underrated is that Keenan Allen is still like the funnel receiver of this offense.
Yeah.
I mean, 9, 10, 10, and 9 targets through his first 3 games.
Very efficient as well.
He's been awesome.
Yeah.
So there's just not a lot of like room for these guys to pick more meat off the bone. So they're going to be super high variance week to week. I don't think either one of them, Williams or Henry, is a priority hold. I mean, Travis Benjamin is out playing Williams so far.
I am absolutely so happy for Keenan Allen. The fact that he has come back from these random injuries and
Homer.
That's also true. Go Bears.
That's fair.
Eric Ebron, 2 receptions, 9 yards. Talk about a guy that just, I don't know, man. I don't think he's got it. I don't know. If you
harsh.
I mean,
he'll put up 2 touchdowns next week.
I get it.
He's got it.
No, I get it. But it's just watching him play, he's a big athletic target, and they try to get him going. They try so hard to get Eric Ebron going. I just don't think he's got it, man. I don't think he's got that it, you know what I mean? I think he's a good player overall, but funneling targets to him just in that offense with those weapons just to me doesn't make any sense, but whatever. Kyle Rudolph, he had 1 reception for 4 yards as well.
Ugh.
Oh, boy.
He has like all your – it's like, ah, great, all our Vikings did win. Kyle Rudolph's like, oh.
Well, what about me, guys? Let's talk about your target leaders here. And by the way, you can catch this NFL.com target – or excuse me, touches – targets.
Also, just NFL.com/targets. We make that one of them as well. It's a much easier one to get
to. Okay, there you go. NFL.com/targets. And this is, I mean, this is a goldmine of information. You guys absolutely should read this, by the way.
Seriously, must read.
Because targets and touches, man, that is the lifeblood of fantasy football.
Name of the game, baby.
It is absolutely the name of the game. All right. Doug Baldwin, Emmanuel Sanders, 15 targets each. Antonio Brown, 14 targets. OBJ and A.J. Green, 13 targets. It was good to see A.J. Green get such a large target share.
50%.
As well. Pretty good.
A literal half.
All the good players got targets.
Pretty good. At the running back position, Ty Montgomery saw 12 targets, and Christian McCaffrey saw 11 targets as well. That's a lot, man. At the tight end position, Jimmy Graham saw 11 targets. Gronk and Ertz saw 10 targets as well. All right. So, waiver wire now. Alex Gelhar writes a terrific piece. NFL.com/waiver wire. Give me 2 names you would pick up off the waiver wire this week.
Well, I'm going to give you 3 quick because we mentioned Chris Thompson off the top. He was
he was a huge add last week.
He's a must-own.
His role, you got to get him. If he's still available in your league.
Must-own.
I know, like, oh, my league is competitive. He's already taken.
But plenty of leagues, he's not owned. Go get him. Yeah. Jamal Charles is somebody I think should be picked up because he has been looking good, and he's been splitting time with C.J. Anderson.
Why the hell did I drop Jamal Charles?
Yeah.
It's okay. Did. It's okay, James. But it's a case where I would expect C.J. Anderson to come back and probably still lead this backfield in touches. But
dropping Jamal Charles for Samaje Perine, I know
Oh, no.
I know
no.
it. I know it.
That's it's, double
it's
trouble
gonna
for
be,
you.
I know it. I know it's going to be just like, my God, why did I do that? All right, go ahead.
And then the other guy I think is a good add this week is Brandon Oliver, especially for Melvin Gordon owners.
Oh, he left that
game briefly with a knee injury.
And he's got
He was
issues.
Coming into it, but Oliver was right behind him in snaps, or he might have actually finished ahead of him in snaps. And he's a guy that we've seen in spot starts in the past come in and produce really
Hold
well
up.
Too.
Producer Chris?
Chargers corner.
Can we get an update on Melvin Gordon? What are you hearing?
We don't have an update yet. I mean, he was running really strong in that first half, which was a real shame. That's why, you know, Phillip Rivers' interceptions kind of negated that. But I think he only had two carries in the second half.
So he got injured, came back, tried to give it a go, couldn't give it a go.
He was on the injury report coming in
right
to the game. I saw him working out pregame, and then he looked great in that first half. And then two carries in the second half. So something we're going to have to monitor. They play the Eagles on Sunday, so we'll get an update on him throughout the week. But I agree with Alex, Brandon Oliver. He's a guy that if Gordon can't go, he's going to get the volume because there's not a lot of other guys. Austin Eckler is there, but I think Brandon Oliver would be the guy.
It's an afternoon game, too, so that thins out your players to add, like, last minute if Gordon is, you know, because it could be one of those cases where all week they're like, oh, he's on track to play, and then you're sitting there watching the early games, and it's like Ian Rappaport's like, oh, Melvin Gordon's out, Brandon
Inactive.
Oliver's going to be the guy, and you're like, ah! So if you're a Gordon owner especially, add Brandon Oliver this week, just
I like
to be safe.
It. Better do it. All right, let's do EDG takeaway. Every damn game and the takeaways we got here in week three. We're going to go hit every single game. We'll go to London, Baltimore at Jacksonville. Matt Harmon, what takeaways do we have?
Oof, Ravens. Oof.
Should we just move on?
Yeah. I mean, not much to say. I mean, this is a bad offense that has suffered a lot of injuries on the offensive line, a lot of absences, too, just in general. And their quarterback is broken. And, really don't want – I know Buck Allen was kind of like the prize of the early waiver wire, but I think you should still be nervous. I mean, they rotated all three of their backs. I mean, even Alex Collins was getting in there looking good. So I don't really think you want to be too sure. The only guy I feel kind of okay about is Jeremy Maclin, and, like, I really emphasize kind of okay.
To your point, Danny Woodhead like lost for a while. Marshall Yanda gone for the season. Joe Flacco dealing with a herniated disc. So, that's problematic.
Ben Watson, baby.
Ben Watson.
Even his playing time went down from like over 80%+ to down to like 60-something%.
Which doesn't surprise me that much. But okay, Denver at Bills. Gelhar, what do you got?
We already mentioned the C.J. Anderson, Jamal Charles split, so that's something to take note of. Trevor Siemian played okay. He made a couple ghastly interceptions, but against a very good defense on the road, so I don't think it's time to panic. He could bounce back. But also, like, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are one of the most concentrated receiving tandems in the NFL. They had 24 of his 40 targets this past week. You're starting them every week.
Yep.
And, like, they always have a safe floor, especially in PPR. Like, on Sunday, they had, like, 90 and 70-some yards and a bunch of catches. Like, just lock them into your lineups. I think if you've got them, don't worry about them. And ride the slow wave and then hope for some peaks.
Which is why it was so frustrating when we saw Benny Fowler and
two TDs
and all these guys get these random touchdowns. Anyways, Pittsburgh at Chicago. French, what you got?
We talked about Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, Martavis Bryant, but the big takeaway for me is Lev Bell finally got in the end zone. Yay, Le'Veon Bell!
Talk about preseason being
97% of the snaps. So.
Hello. There you go. Bucks at Vikings. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
I think we've kind of hit this game pretty well throughout the podcast.
Oh, you know what? I will ask you a question on this one, though.
Yes.
Jameis Winston doesn't look right.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. He looks like Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
Like, he's prone to just, like, ugly games against good defenses, too, which, I mean playing
yes
in Minnesota.
He's new Brett Favre. He's going to make those plays that make you go, wow. And then he's also going to make you plays that go, wow, Jameis.
Not to mention, I mean, they got bumped off their game script right away. This is a team that does want to run the ball. They could not do that. They really just were never in position to do that against Minnesota trailing right away. I do think one thing to take away from this game, like you mentioned, Mike Evans, shut down pretty well. I mean, kept not shut down, but kept in check by Xavier Rhodes most of this game, covered him for over 72% of his pass plays. But DeSean Jackson, sure enough, 4 for 84 and a touchdown, much like Martavis Bryant went for 390-plus and a touchdown in week two. I think that is something to monitor going forward.
Explosive number twos.
Yeah, because, I mean, Trey Waynes, Terrence Newman, Tremaine Brock, those guys are susceptible to getting burned by the deep
over
ball.
The top,
so,
yeah.
You know, but when you've got a number one going against him that it looks like Xavier Rhodes is going to track, the number two receiver might be interesting.
Miami taking on the Jets in New York. Alex Gailhar, what do you got?
Eat it, Arby's.
Eat it, Arby's.
This game was awful. For fantasy, the Jets passing offense, like McCown might be on the streaming radar, but as predictably, Jermaine Kearse fell back to earth after his touchdowns, and Robbie Anderson got a deep one this time.
He did?
The Miami offense, WTF, but
I don't know.
Seriously.
Thank the fantasy gods for garbage points for everybody that started Devontae Parker.
Or Jay Cutler.
And those of us that streamed Jay Cutler because that last touchdown was a saving grace.
It was so unnecessary. I love it.
I know. I was like, I hope they don't just kneel it and call it a game. They win for it.
I thought that's what they were
going to do. I'm so glad they did. Miami has to travel on the road, I think, to London to play the Saints next week. So it'll be interesting to see to hear about what the team is doing and how they're preparing for that because – that would be a game where you'd expect that offense to get going against the
Cutler's
Saints.
Cutler's thrown 4 touchdowns next week.
Yeah, just lock it up.
After like obviously a letdown in a spot that like we all even said like Jay Cutler's a good streamer, but would it surprise any of us?
So what you're saying is I should drop Tom Brady for Jay Cutler?
Yes,
obviously.
Gotcha.
Puke.
Check. ATL at Detroit. Franchise.
Oh man, this game ended in a bad way. If you're a Lions fan,
that's not cool.
They
man.
Took a touchdown away from
uncool.
Golden State. Would have been his second touchdown of the game. He had 11 targets, 7 receptions.
Indeed.
Only 58 receiving yards. Also, Matt Ryan threw 3 picks in this game.
Yeah.
Not great, Bob.
Nah.
But Julio Jones did well. Devonta Freeman did well.
By the way, Detroit backfield remains sad.
Sad.
They can't run the ball.
Tevin Coleman had 89 scrimmage
yards. Well, and like they're very talented players, but for fantasy, it's sad because those roles are just chopped up in a way that like makes it entirely unappetizing for fantasy.
For whatever reason, they can't block holes open for these guys. It's just, I don't know. Unless it's off tackle and they're depending on speed, Detroit cannot run the ball inside. Literally cannot. Otherwise, they're actually getting pretty decent pass protection. So I don't know. It's an offensive line. I think that's good in pass pro, but not good running the ball. So I don't really know what to do with Amir Abdullah. But
touchdowns yet for Abdullah.
I know.
Well,
and the efficiency has been bad.
Be bad.
New Orleans taking on Carolina in Carolina. Matt Harmon.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we talked Carolina's offense is broken right now for a number of different reasons. Christian McCaffrey ended up with 9 catches in this game for over 100 yards. I think you can probably expect that going forward with the lack of passing game options, though I don't think that is a good thing overall for Carolina's offense. But New Orleans is interesting because, I mean, this Carolina defense coming into this game looked like one of the best units in the league, and New Orleans was, you know, fine against them from an offensive standpoint. We still haven't seen the best of this unit, in my opinion. And Willie Snead comes back next week.
Oh, that's another guy on the waiver wire.
Yep, he was on my list. Because his percentage has dropped in each of the past 2 weeks. And also, just another one quick while we're talking about guys whose percentage has dropped. Joe Mixon dropped in a surprising amount of leagues. He's still owned widely across NFL.com, but a lot of people
just check.
Yeah, just check. There was in our Hipsters Listener League, I know he was dropped. So, yeah, it happens.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, I think the Saints offense, Michael Thomas – on the first drive, went five for five, caught a touchdown, ended up with over 80 yards on the day. So
he did nothing after the first drive. It was so funny.
I was disappointed.
Well, barely needed to be
that's
honest.
True.
I mean, the Saints controlled this game throughout.
You're right.
So
no, you're
that, that's what I'm saying. We haven't seen the best yet of the Saints offense.
Okay, there you go. By the way, I'm excited about Alvin Kamara. I think he's starting to carve a pretty decent role out in this offense. He looks like a bigger, more explosive, like Darren Sproles type.
Yeah,
in this offense,
Darren Sproles tight. Ding!
I actually wrote in targets and touches. I would not be surprised if he kind of usurps the Adrian Peterson role.
Interesting.
At some point this season,
Peterson
has not been efficient. He's not getting snaps.
Yeah,
he's trending down, and Kamara's trending up. So.
Mark Ingram, though, quietly getting it done as like a low end flex play. 16 touches, 86 yards.
He is the lead back.
I mean, it's not great because they're still giving Peterson 11 touches, but like,
it's like, well, he's going to give me 6 points.
I think he's
That's something in the running back market today.
Yeah,
it is, especially once these bye weeks hit. I mean, it's interesting to me when people want to make trades early on in the season because it's like, bro, you have two good running backs right now, but what happens when the bye weeks hit? And what happens when injuries hit? I'd rather have the depth right now and then load up for the future. But yeah, that's
like,
just me.
Oh, is Elijah McGuire worth the pickup? I don't know.
Cleveland taking on Indianapolis. Alex Gilhar, what you got?
We kind of already talked about the Colts side of this a little bit. So on the Browns side, I mean, if you streamed Kaiser, he was okay. He's going to have some spots in good matchups. But I think the bigger discussion is in the backfield, where Isaiah Crowell, this was a game where we thought he was going to get going. 12 carries, 44 yards. I mean, they fell down right away, I think, in this game. But Duke Johnson, after week one, playing zero snaps in the backfield, has now played, I think, like 70 or 80% of his snaps in the backfield.
How about that
each
touchdown?
The last 2 weeks. That touchdown run was spectacular.
How about that touchdown?
He was, like, done five yards behind the line of scrimmage and then just took it and dove, and it was crazy.
So what we'll need to watch moving forward is if he does start getting more touches. He's in that Chris Thompson zone right now where he had a great week this week. Only had 8 touches, and 6 of them were through the air. So
crazy.
If he does start eating into Crowell's workload from the backfield,
I'm
that's going to be
about Crow,
bad news for the Crow and good news for Duke Johnson.
Dang it.
I'm worried about the Crow, man. I think he's – ooh, boy.
Just one thing here. I think it would be unfair if I didn't mention Rashard Higgins.
Yes, we need to
yes,
get some
in
memoriam music.
Yeah, look, I tweeted this out after the game yesterday.
Yeah,
I am meeting with my team of lawyers.
Okay, you huddled up with the lawyers
later this week to craft an official statement his stat line. For now, I did tweet out a Bitmoji with a cheer up and a smile face.
Perfect.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Rashard Higgins, for those listening, 2 catches, 10 yards on 6 targets.
Started Rashard Higgins over Diggs.
I wouldn't.
This guy.
That's a kick in the nuts for sure. But I would not like go out and drop Rashard Higgins. But it's probably not going to happen.
He was dropping the ball.
Why
wouldn't you drop him?
Like I said, I'm crafting an official statement to come. Forthcoming official statement on this issue.
Oh, we should keep trucking. We're running
Houston taking on the Pats. French, what you got?
I mean, dang it, Texans, you almost had them.
Almost.
You almost had them, and then Tom Brady in the last seconds.
The other thing, too, is what is that DB doing? Like, why are you trying to pick that ball off?
Push him out of bounds.
Exactly. Or just hit him. Knock the ball out. He's trying to pick it. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened there. But anyway, Brandon Cooks, 131 yards and 2 touchdowns. Finally,
the
Brandon
second
Cooks
one was
something.
So unnecessary.
It was very unnecessary.
Oh,
also,
my God.
My other big takeaway here.
By the way, I'm going against Brandon Cooks.
Dante Foreman
yes.
Was the RB24 in standard with 9 points, 11 PPR points.
Interesting.
He had 65 receiving yards thanks to 2 catches of over 30 yards.
Yeah.
Go get this guy if he's still available, man.
He was in my waiver wire column. He needs to be added. Lamar Miller's still the lead back right now, but like I think he's
holding on by a
standalone value.
Yeah, his grip on that is tenuous.
Miller's
washed. Yes.
Miller's like in a movie, he's hanging on from the cliff, and like one finger at a time keeps slipping off from his grip from the lead job.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. All right, New York Giants taking on Philadelphia. What a great finish to this game. Some random rookie kicker kicking a 61-yarder for the game winner.
Oh, it was awesome.
Oh, my God. What a great game.
And the Giants started this game very much like, well –
They
still suck, but they got going in the second half. And, I mean, Odell Beckham took over in the second half, scoring both of his 2 touchdowns as the game was on the line.
One was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
That catch was absurd.
He's back for sure. He looked good there in the second half. One thing that I think the Giants did really switch up from their first 2 games per Next Gen Stats, their first 2 games, over 2.8 seconds time to throw in week 1, over 2.6 in week 2. Eli Manning all the way down to just 2.01 time to throw.
That's quick.
Second fastest of week 3. So I think they definitely were like, all right, let's get the ball out quick.
Yeah.
I mean, Marshall under 10 yards per reception. Beckham under 10 yards per reception. Obviously got some red zone targets there. But even Sterling Shepard, I mean, he had a big 7 for 133 in a touch, but he took that 177 yards.
Yeah,
they're definitely just getting the ball out quick, which makes sense. I mean, I've not been a big Ben McAdoo fan, but this was a nice adjustment to see. Get the ball out quick. Don't force the ball downfield for a team that can't protect.
Also, for the record, Sterling Shepard, though, next week plays that Bucs banged-up secondary, and if the Giants employ the same strategy, it could be a decent pickup and plug-and-play.
And Shepard, I mean, he's a good player. He's,
very good player.
He's their second-best receiver after Beckham right now to me, and it was an ugly first 2 games for him. I mean, from just a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah.
But that's because you can't run your offense through a slot receiver. We've talked about that a lot. Now they have Beckham back. That opens things up in the middle field.
There you go. Yeah. Seattle taking on the Titans in a hard-hitting game. High scoring, though. Alex Gellhar, what do you got?
We kind of talked about the Seattle side of this, but I want to give out one thing. The DeMarco Murray, he had a great game. He looks back a little bit, which was a surprise because the hamstring dogged him all week.
Exactly.
Bad news bears for everybody that started Derrick Henry because he got a thigh bruise right away and then was pulled for much of the game. Terrible. However, worth noting, if you're streaming fantasy defenses, do not stream them against the Titans offense. Through 3 weeks, they have opposing defense have scored a combined 0 points against the Titans offense.
Wow.
They had 2 -1 point showings and 1 2-point outing. So
I guess it makes sense given their offensive line.
Their offensive line is great. He doesn't get sacked. Mariota rarely turns the ball over, and they clock control. So
right. Also, the Seahawks are being gashed by running backs.
Yes, that is worth noting,
too. They give up a bunch of yards to Carlos Hyde in week two, and then yesterday.
Back-to-back weeks.
How do you trade for Sheldon Richardson, one of the best run stuffers in the game, and just get continually gashed by running backs?
I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
I'll tell you what. When you're on the field for 25 of the first 30 minutes of the game, though, that's
makes an
impact.
Issue.
That's a great
issue.
Point. Should be noted as well, Chris Carson, 11 carries. Thomas Rawls, Eddie Lacy, 0.
Yep. Carson's featured back for now.
Let so the Chris Carson era begin.
You can play him. I mean, it's lower upside. It still feels a little lower upside right now, but he is the featured back for now. Yeah. Roll with him while you got it.
And his touchdown was receiving.
I had written about this. I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
CJ Process had a decent game,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was okay. But I had written about this in Kono's regarding Chris Carson, but Pete Carroll does not do committees. So if you're thinking, I got Thomas Rawls, maybe it's going to be a Thomas Rawls, Chris Carson committee.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll don't do committees, man. Yeah. So you got to – if you – whoever you got – and I'm not saying drop Thomas Rawls, but if you have Thomas Rawls or you got Chris Carson, find out if they're starting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If Thomas Rawls is starting, if all the practice reports are good, I'd be okay rolling with it. That being said, if you have Chris Carson and you find out Thomas Rawls is starting, I might be a little wary starting Chris Carson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, he doesn't do in-game – he doesn't do committees like within each individual game.
That's right.
But the spotlight moves from guy
yes,
to guy
that's exactly
the season.
Right. Kansas City taking on the Chargers. French, what you got?
Yeah, we talked a lot about this game already. One guy mention, Tyreek Hill, 5 receptions, 77 yards, and a touch. He's had 2 really nice games now to start the year. So.
Indeed.
I think we're at a point – just real quick. I think we're at a point where, because this is still an Alex Smith-led conservative offense, that I don't think we should expect – like Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill to both be able to hit their ceilings.
I see what you're saying.
Week to week. Because, I mean, if you look at it,
yeah,
franchise says he's had 2 nice games.
Right.
The one sandwich in the middle there is the one where Travis
Kelce
went off for 100 and a touch. So
right.
That might be something to – and I don't really know how do you
game script
differentiate
that one? Yeah.
Between that one.
Right.
But it seems like an area that's not going to happen week
okay.
to week.
There you go. Cincinnati taking on the Packers. We'll stay with you, Matt Harmon.
Well, Bill Lazor, new offensive coordinator there, just came in and was right away like, all right, we're going to just follow the hashtag, just throw it to your good players.
Yeah.
Because A.J. Green, we mentioned 50% of the targets. And,
right.
His usage was never anything to panic over. He had 10 targets, 8 targets.
Yeah.
Andy Dalton's still not playing great. I mean, the end of the game, he started out fine, but started to wither as the game went on. So that's going to make Green a little volatile, but it is what it is. Joe Mixon's the other big story. He played 57% of the team's plays.
Yeah, buddy.
Jeremy Hill, 23%. Gio Bernard down to 20%. And Mixon got
And still got the touchdown.
Of course.
Yeah, I know. Dang it.
All right, there you go. I think we've hit Oakland, Washington to death. So we'll
Agreed.
Close out with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hugs. Give me daps because I'll be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
Daily Dap time. We shall go to the Magical Beard of Fantasy. Matt Franciscovich, what do you got?
I'm going to Daily Daps his ice cream spot in L.A. called Salt and Straw.
Right. Oh,
Salt you guys been there?
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
I've been there twice now in the last 3 weeks because we just keep going back. but for the first time, I had the roasted strawberry and toasted white chocolate on a waffle cone.
Unbelievable.
And my life, I think I went to heaven. While I was eating it. I'm actually just a ghost sitting
I
here.
See.
You're just a
good.
Husk of
because
a human being and your soul already went.
Yes.
You know what I find interesting
it was
about
so good.
You know what I find interesting about ice cream places?
What?
It's this has stayed true for the last 30 years. you go to ice cream places because you can get flavors there you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
So like Baskin Robbins, when they had their 31 flavors or whatever it was, it used to just be that you could only get like vanilla and chocolate at the grocery stores, but you could go to Baskin Robbins to get this crazy strawberry ice cream, or you know what it was?
Right. Cookies and cream.
Yeah. Whoa. Oh, cookies and cream. Sign me up. This is crazy. But once those became more mainstream, it's like salt and straw. You still go there because where the hell else are you going to get a roasted strawberry?
I know. It's,
you know,
very eccentric.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
And there's a lot of places like this, but they have like a seasonal rotation where you can only get certain flavors certain months of the year. So
and
you go, you taste the seasonal one, you get your standard.
And they make their waffle cones in-house.
Oh.
And let me tell you, when you walk in those doors.
It was so good, man.
Oh, baby.
All
right, there you go. Alex Gellhart, what do you got?
Two things for me. One, first, very excited for the return of You're the Worst on FX.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite shows on the air. Just kind of like a anti-hero sitcom, I guess I'd call it. Like where they're obviously it's called You're the Worst. The people aren't that great. But I think the writing's I think the writing's really sharp, and they've got really interesting characters, and they dive into some really interesting storylines. So
great.
Actually it's on FXX, I believe. I always forget the delineation with what's on FX and what's on FXX.
Right.
And soon they'll have XXX, and then they'll have FX8, the Ocho.
FX the Ocho.
And then also wanted to give a Daily Daps to, there's a tennis player, her name's Monica Puig. She is from Puerto Rico, and she's doing a very similar, like, J.J. Watt type of campaign where she's fundraising for Puerto Rico, which, I mean, in case you didn't know, because a lot of other dumb stuff came up over the weekend and was in the national spotlight, like, Puerto Rico's still, like, without power for almost the entire country.
Right.
And, like, these are also a lot of American citizens. I'm not, like, you know, go throw your money to some foreign country, which we should also do. We should also help everybody in the world. But, like, this is an extension of America. And,
it is.
Like, it's just an afterthought right now. So I tweeted out the link to her campaign. You can donate. I donated last week. Just, you know, a few bucks. Throw in $5-$10 or whatever to help, you know, our fellow people down there, because they have just been absolutely devastated.
I don't
by the
know if you've seen this video, but there is apparently one working cell tower in Puerto Rico, and it's off of like a freeway, right? So like there is a line of cars to drive by this cell phone tower.
So you can call, like,
so you
loved
can
ones
call in. You get a couple minutes just to call in and tell people, hey, I'm good.
Well, like, yeah, because there's no cell tower, so people don't even know if their relatives down there
I'm saying.
What their status
it's
is,
crazy.
If they have food, water, power, if they're safe. Like, so whatever you can chip in, like, it's a dire situation. So
Matt Harmon,
appreciate everybody helping out.
What do you got?
Yeah, I'm just going to keep it simple here and just dap this weekend of football, man, because it was
so good.
Like it started from Thursday night with like the game of the freaking year.
What a tone setter that was.
You know, Rams 49ers, Goff v. Brian Hoyer
in a legit phenomenal game.
Like it had everything.
Everyone was poo pooing it.
Yes,
which I understand. But man, that game was good.
Yeah,
you remember
was.
There was that meme we shared in our text of
the guy
with the red solo cup who makes like the ooh no face, like when they advertised that first TNF game, like Rams 49ers. Somebody photoshopped that guy's face into
like,
it.
Nope.
Well, suck it, person who made that meme.
Exactly.
I mean, I laughed a lot at that
for
meme.
Sure, for
but
sure.
Like that game,
the NFL was making that face like back to everybody.
Yeah, right.
They took shots at it.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't like Thursday Night Football?
Yeah. So it was awesome. It was one of those like, and I mean, even after Sunday yesterday. It was just one of those things like, I mean, yeah, we're here like 12 hours of the day, all of us together doing this thing on Sunday, working. And it's like, it's pretty awesome that we get to do this. And to give, like, in the middle of the day after those first games, be like, I need a cigarette right now.
Yeah.
That was a lot.
The ending.
And I don't even care. I don't even care about any of this, like, in terms of my, I don't have a, you know.
Scott Hansen's head was spinning.
It was one of those days which I love, like, in the newsroom, because everybody's working a lot, but everybody's also watching football. And you got so many of those pops where, like, the Tariq Cohen overtime run.
Yeah.
And it was like, whoa!
What happened?
And I've heard, you know, other media places, like, aren't a little bit more, like, let's keep it.
Don't
celebrate. So as much as, you know, and again, maybe I'm just, I don't know why I would want to, but here I am like, yeah, NFL, you're so great, but thanks for hiring me. But like, you know, for as much grief as like the NFL gets for not being fun, they let us have a lot of fun here on Sundays.
Yeah, man, it was those group of games went by so fast too.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, we were here for 12 hours, and honestly, it was like that.
It didn't feel like that until the last hour.
Yeah,
but I mean, it was a 15-minute stretch, right? Where it was Tom Brady, game winner to Brandon Cooks. Then we had
the Bears Steelers finish.
Oh my god,
Eagles Giants,
and then Packers overtime,
and then even in the afternoon,
what the hell?
Yeah. Seahawks Titans came down to the last
craziness.
Minute. Oh. Packers overtime. Geronimo Allison.
The Eagles won on a 61-yard
field
goal kick.
That's right too.
That's great.
It was incredible.
Great.
What a weekend.
Of a great afternoon and evening of football. I will daily daps Adam Rank in the Danger Zone because first of all, Adam Rank came up with this concept for the Danger Zone, and I convinced him to bring it over to the network side. But and so he's been gracious enough to let me kind of tag along. But in a week where I literally went 0-for-8 in my fantasy leagues.
Wow.
Benching all kinds of great players. I benched Dalvin Cook for Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Just a comedy of errors everywhere.
Aren't you supposed to be an expert?
All right, calm down. 0-for-8, I believe, in all of my leagues across the board. In a week that was like that, and I should be like in a blanket crying. I was so happy.
Yep.
Because all three Danger Zone picks hit. Ben Watson, Jacoby Brissett, and then Geronimo Allison randomly at
the
end.
Buck 22. He put
Buck
up.
22.
That's amazing.
Pretty nice.
It was amazing. And so in a week where I go 0-for-8, I was through the moon because all three random-ass Danger Zone picks hit.
I love you and I were talking about how Allison like was still a smart pick and I think he had 5-for-50 or
yeah,
something
it was
like
okay.
that in the edge of the game. You're like, you're okay.
You'll
like,
take that.
In
it's
a deep
right.
league,
yeah.
like I picked yeah, up this undrafted
random
wide
guy.
Receiver for
sure.
the Packers.
Yeah.
And then he catches that 70-yarder in overtime. Just perfect. Just
and,
perfect.
And I think I don't know if you guys were in the newsroom, but I lost my ish.
Oh, did.
I was not there, but I heard.
You were there.
I
was there.
Completely.
Yeah, Gellhar wasn't in the room, but he still heard you from the other building.
I was across campus, and I heard
it.
James.
I absolutely lost it. All right, so there you go. That is the show. Oh, producer Chris, give me a daily dap, my friend.
You know what? I saw a good movie on Saturday. I took a
great
football. Stronger with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, nice. I want to check that out.
A limited release. It was really good, man. They had some funny parts, some serious parts. It was based on a true story. I think guy Jeff Bauman, who lost his legs in the Boston Marathon bombings. But it's just an overall great flick, man. I suggest everybody check it out.
All right, there you go. That's your show. For producer Chris, for the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alice Gailhar, Matt Harmon, Boy Young Boy, and the Magical Beard of Fantasy, Matt Franciscovich, I am James Coe. We'll see you.